Okay, why don't we start, and then folks can join in as they come. So this is Melissa Coffin at the Lowell Center for Sustainable Production, and our webinar speaker today is Dr. Amy Cannon, who is the world's first PhD green chemist and who worked here at UMass Lowell for a few years before becoming the executive director of Beyond Benign. And she's going to talk with us today about what Beyond Benign is doing in regards to green chemistry education.
Kathy Willey.
So before we get started, just one housekeeping item is just that for any reason, if the technology today hiccups and you're not able to see the presentation, the slides have been uploaded to the GC3 website, which is greenchemistryandcommerce.org, and click on updates, and the slides are posted there. So Amy, why don't you take it from here?
Okay, great. So thank you. Thank you so much for logging on and for participating in this. So I'm going to give an overview of what we're doing here in education and why we're doing it, and the different areas that we work in. And if there are any burning questions as I'm going through this as well, feel free to speak up and jump right in there. I'll try to. I'm assuming you can just give a shout out and get your question in there. So, I've got a few slides I'm going to go through here. Again, I'll give an overview of what we do, why we do it. This is our mission. Here at Beyond Benign, this is our big picture mission. We promote science driven by the principles of green chemistry to create an environmentally, socially, and economically prosperous world. Yes, we're not shooting too low on this one. And we work in many different areas, all the way from K-12 to community, industry, government, academia, pretty much you name it. And we specialize in green chemistry education, training, and outreach across many different groups, many different sectors. So, go through these slides. We're headquartered just if you don't know about us, we're headquartered just north of Boston in Wilmington, Mass. We have employees. We actually have employees here in Massachusetts and Colorado. Our Connecticut employee just retired, even though we're only 2 years old, so we already have one retiree. but we work with curriculum specialists nationwide and internationally, which I'll explain a little bit more about as we go. As Melissa mentioned at the beginning, I was a professor at UMass Lowell before starting Beyond Benign, and one of the reasons why we started this nonprofit is to continue some of the educational work that we were doing in green chemistry that began really at UMass. So it's co-founded by myself and John Warner, and we are actually co-located with the Warner Babcock Institute for Green Chemistry. So we're pretty lucky that we're in the same building and we get to have access to the scientists here at Warner Babcock as well, which is nice for me, being a scientist myself. So I'll go on to the next one, or not, sorry. I'm going to jump. What I just did was pressed my arrow button on my computer as if I'm going to the next slide, but I have to actually use the bouncing ball, so sorry, bear with me as I take it down. So on-site, we do have a classroom space where we host this. These are a few pictures of a teacher workshop. We hold teacher workshops on-site. We'll hold field trips. We've had workforce development and government meetings and things here on-site. So it's a room that we use for all kinds of things, but it's nice. It's right next to all the labs and the facilities that we have. The whole facility that's here is about 40,000 square feet. This is one classroom sort of in the middle of it. So it's a great space for us to be able to do some educational work. And, all right, I think we're loaded, sort of. It's coming up. eventually. So we work in four main areas, although they're pretty interdependent and interrelated. K-12 community workforce development, and this third one, which I'm not really going to mention today, it's brand new to us, art and science, and I'll explain that if there's interest as well. And we have K-12 for that first tier. Can everyone actually see the page, or is it just my page that's not loading?
We can see it.
Page is loading right now, slide 5.
Huh.
Just loading right now.
Yeah, it seems to be going slow.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I'm going to, so you can kind of see it, hopefully. But I'm going to go into these in more detail anyway, so we can keep going. Again, like I said, they're interrelated, but I'll touch on really those first three, K-12 community and workforce development, and some of the things that we're doing in these areas. All right, we're on 6. Which is partly loaded on my screen. Okay, sorry, not sure why it's not loading. So the first one that I'll talk about is K-12, and we do all kinds of different curriculum development and teacher training in this space, and I have a few slides about why we do K-12 work, why this is our first tier, and in a sense, we hold it to be of pretty high importance, and I have a couple slides about this. So if you look at this slide, this is a NAEP assessment, the National Assessment of Educational Progress. It's a Department of Education test, really, that's given at grade 4, grade 8, and grade 12. And you can see our students here in the U.S., this last study was in 2005, as our students are advancing through from grade 4 to grade 12, you can see almost 50% of our students have a below basic understanding of science by the time that they graduate from high school. You can see the proficient is shrinking and advanced is shrinking. And this is an understanding of science, of science achievement performance. So this leads to a number of things, which I'm sure many of you have experienced in your own lives. And this is one of them, which I've lost my X and Y axes, so forgive me for that. I can, I'll explain it. This is the number of degrees given in physical sciences so on the X axis here, it's from 1966 to about 2004. This is an NSF study. And on the Y axis, there's actually two Y axes. The black right here is a total percentage of degrees given in the physical sciences, and that's down from about 3% to about 1% today. So that's the total undergraduate degrees given, total bachelor's degrees given. And this is the percentage, and the circle is the total number of degrees. Total number of degrees given in the physical sciences. So unfortunately, we are on a decline here in the U.S. This is also true for our graduate levels as well, but we make up for that by importing many of our graduate students as well. So we're on a decline. At the same time, we need more sustainable materials. We have a crisis of science literacy. So that below basic understanding, and also a decline of students actually entering the sciences. So this is why we have such a focus on K-12, and we do this. How do we do this? We do this through a number of different ways. We work with teachers and students, and I'll explain some of our programs that we currently are doing. These are some of our K-12 core philosophies for our curriculum and training. We work with teachers, and we have teachers help us generate and help us deliver the training and the content of our training. All of our materials are classroom tested and supported. We do hands-on inquiry based to really engage the students and the teachers in learning. We really we hope to really get to the students that really think that science isn't for them, or they might not be turned on by science, and really turn that student on. We do all kinds of different industry partnerships, neutrality, that check mark here, that really means basically we don't give the answers to the students. We have them generate it themselves through our inquiry-based activities. All of our educational materials are posted online, free of charge, freely downloadable into Word document or anything like that. So point teachers in our direction. It's a great resource for them. It's part of our philosophy is really to keep things current and to keep things accessible for teachers as well. What else can I do? All right. Our curriculum and training, our core subject areas that we're working on now, or what we've got now, is green chemistry. So we have a middle school and a high school curriculum for both, for each one of these subject areas. Our newest curriculum is called Me in Your Neighborhood and Me in Context, which is math and engineering. And we sometimes call it green math, and then people get confused, say, what the heck is green math? But anyway, so these are some of our middle school and our high school programs, which are super fun. And then our third area is biotechnology. That's the how the fur flies and what's up with Gina. So we have all this curriculum content online and accessible. We have a trained number of teachers, worked with many, and I've got a couple slides for how many teachers that we worked with in this area across the country and internationally. And what I thought was one of our curriculum specialists, Brooke Carson, she's one of our co-directors of K-12 curriculum and training. She's been running these Saturday sessions to test some of our curriculum. And one of her last Saturday sessions, we had a great quote that came from this middle school student. She, of course, bribed them with food, but this was the quote. I came for the donuts, but I stayed for the science. And it was just beautiful. They really showed up on a Saturday. And really were engaged. So the feedback from the students is amazing when they're engaged with this curriculum. We have a great group of teachers that we work with. Internationally, these are the number of teachers that we know of that are adopting our curriculum. So we have quite a bit in the United States, over in UK and Europe. Puerto Rico, we do have Spanish translations of much of our curriculum as well, which is also posted online. And you can see some of the other countries we've worked in. I'm not going to go into this in too great a detail here, except for I'll show you some of these pictures. Our latest curriculum work that we're doing is in India. We were invited over to take part in the Industrial Green Chemistry Workshop at the end of 2009 that Nurica organized over there. So we participated in that, and then we helped to run a student workshop for college students, and then we also ran a teacher workshop for about 300 teachers and college-level professors. And so we're embarking on that. We're growing that, working with some Indian educators and developing that further to really bring green chemistry to India. So that's our latest international work that we're doing. Sorry if this looks a little funny. I think some of my graphics got changed because I converted this to a PDF since it was such a large file. But just to show you the impact of one teacher, we have one teacher. This is Frances Cater, who is over in the UK. She went to one of our trainings, and she came back and implemented it with her students. She then got really pumped up and trained her whole department. She then went to modify the curriculum because the UK has a slightly different format for curriculum than what we have over here in the U.S. She then went on to train four other local schools. So just one teacher is a huge multiplier of impact, and that's not even counting how many students that she reaches within a year. So in our K through 12 work, we are continuing our work abroad and at home. So like I already mentioned, some of the India work that we're working on right now. We are continuing to build our lessons using both the green chemistry and green engineering principles. And this is in K through 12. We're now expanding to support community college and university, which I'll explain in a minute as well. Okay. Hopefully you guys can all see the slides as I'm clicking through them, too. So hopefully they're coming up okay.
They are.
They are? Okay. Good. Excellent. And as Melissa mentioned, too, they are posted on the Green Chemistry and Commerce website, too. So if anyone has trouble seeing them, you can go there as well. So the second tier that I want to mention, which bridges really that first tier, the K-12 piece, is community, and it's K-12 and community outreach. So yes, we hope as we do our outreach and as we do our educational work, we do hope that we're inspiring the next generation of scientists to pursue studies in the sciences, but we also don't expect that everyone, and we don't need everyone to become a chemist or to become a scientist, but having a more informed citizenship would be a wonderful thing to help in terms of being a more active consumer, voter, and all of these things. So this is what we do really in our community work. And this is done through a number of different ways, but yes, this is the goals of our K-12 and community outreach. It's, yes, to generate excitement in science, learn about green chemistry and sustainability, and hopefully instill some stewardship and social responsibility as these students go on through their careers. And yeah, we do hope to inspire a couple scientists that will come and help us, you know, create these next generation of materials. A lot of our outreach is done regionally because it's limited to where we can actually be within a geographic location, so a lot of it is limited to New England, although some of our outreach models we are trying, we've been talking with some of the folks in the Great Lakes region, Lynn Katz-Cherry and folks out there, about really duplicating some of our educational and outreach activities out there in that region and across the country. So we're hoping to expand this, but this is the breadth of what we do. We reach, you know, 3,000 to 4,000 students, mostly students in a year, through a number of different outreach visits. We reach teachers, and then that last bullet, outreach fellows, which I'll mention on the following slide. Yeah, here we go. So our outreach fellows really bridges onto the undergraduate level. And these are regional undergraduate college students that we work with. They're mainly from 4 schools, although we have a couple others that aren't listed here. But we have over 40, there was about 44 this past academic year, and we have a number of them carrying on for this coming academic year. Gordon College, Simmons College in Boston, Suffolk in Boston, and Bridgewater down in Bridgewater. We have a couple others in Boston that Emmanuel is another that's been involved with this. And then we have Tufts University joining us in the fall as well. But these students come into our program. We train them on green chemistry. They help us be ambassadors of green chemistry in the classroom. It works fantastic. It works great. These students, when they go out and talk to we get them trained, and then we get them to go out and talk to K-12 classes and community groups. And it's a great way to do it because the K-12 students, you know, see these college students, which don't look too much older than them and don't look too much different, and they think, oh, geez, you know, if they can do it, maybe I can do it too. So it's really a very effective way to get students interested and excited. We have them, they participate, these fellows participate in our outreach. They do a project, which can either be research-based, that will be in collaboration with their research professor, with their academic advisor or their research professor at their college. And, or it could be another way to communicate the science of what they're doing to a larger audience. And then the last piece is they are exposed to the larger green chemistry community. So we had last week at the Green Chemistry and Engineering Conference, we had 8 of our fellows come down with us to the national meeting. They actually helped run the student workshop on the day after the end of that conference, and it was a really great way to expose them to the larger green chemistry community and get them talking to the scientists and involved with the community. So we're very much looking forward to tracking these students as they go through their careers and seeing where they end up and how they do. But so this is the this is really our second year that we're embarking on with this program. We had a very informal program like this our first year in operation, and last year was our first full year of this program. This is one of the concepts. So this goes back to John Warner's philosophy, I guess, as a research advisor at UMass. So in his graduate groups, what he would do is he would have all of his students translate and create outreach activities that they could do in a classroom. So basically, challenging students to translate the science of what they're doing, sort of this high-level science, into something, say, a fourth grader or an eighth grader could understand, which can be, a lot of times, much more intimidating than talking to a professional audience. So, but it comes back to this core philosophy from Einstein. You know, if you can't explain something simply, you really don't understand it well. And so, really, fundamental ideas in science are simple, and getting back to those core simple concepts is what we try to do through this. The last piece that I'm going to talk to you about today is workforce development, and this is the newest area for us, but it's quite exciting. And we've been carrying out workforce development for in a number of different areas at the undergraduate community college level, some technical level training, and then a green chemistry training for workers, which we actually collaborated with some folks from UMass Lowell on that. And then our latest tool I'll explain, which you may have seen, the iSustain Green Chemistry Index. So I've got a few slides about that here as well, if you didn't see that at the last GC3 meeting. But this workforce development piece really has to do, we relate it to green chemistry and regional economic development. So we relate it to the Michigan executive order saying basically you can have sustainable processes and materials and regional economic development. These things do not have to be separate from each other. They can work together. And so it's really all about these things is what we focus on for workforce development. So it's getting a workforce that's trained and educated, getting the correct resources that a company or an organization needs, and getting the education in that workforce that's really needed in order to get a company to be all of these things that I've got listed here, better community relations beyond compliance. Not just meeting compliance, reduce liability and health, worker health and safety, all of these things. And this is obviously the 12 principles are aligned. We see them being in line with regional economic development, and it's a great way to attract and maintain companies in a region. We've been working regionally up here with some of our government officials and a lot of other interested folks about how to do this within a region using local resources and having a good supply of jobs and a great educational network, which of course is key so that you're feeding that workforce. And so if green chemistry is to advance throughout the 21st century, which, geez, it better. It's really got to take a number of things. We got to have the research and development, which has to be carried out through to implementation, and that's going to come from the companies, that's going to come from academic labs, and that's going to come from many different places or institutes such as the Warner Babcock Institute. And then we have to have the education, which I've already spoken a lot about. And so really helping to train that next generation of scientists to feed that workforce. And then the tools piece, which I'll mention some of the tools. That's a piece that we've been working on here, especially through iSustain. And the tools are a number of different ways. There's curriculum and training that can be geared towards any particular audience, whether it be a technician-level audience, managerial level audience, or professional level. We have all kinds of resources for this, and we're able to, and generally we work in collaboration with the Warner Babcock Institute when we are designing curriculum and a training for a professional audience. And then we also focus on the research tools for designing safer chemicals and designing safer processes. There's lots of resources that are currently out there. There's some solvent substitution guides. There's some reagent guides that companies and government organizations have put out, such as Pfizer has some great publications in this area. Internally, we have developed what we call some green chemistry and practice guides, which help our scientists here at Warner Babcock really guide them towards safer chemistry and better choices in terms of what the solvents and the reagents that they're choosing as they're putting their processes together. There's hazard and toxicity property guides. Some of those that are coming out of Yale are some great resources there, some great tools that will be coming out there, so some great work that we've seen so far. And then that last one, iSustain, I've got a few slides to show you about iSustain if you haven't seen that already. And iSustain Green Chemistry Index, it's a, here's the homepage of it, and it's just iSustain.com, pretty easy to find. But this was developed mainly by SciTech, and John Warner had a lot of the first ideas and algorithms around some of the calculations that go behind it. But SciTech really brought this tool and developed it to the level that it's at today. And we are we're in a partnership with SciTech, Sofion, and ourselves. So SciTech is a chemical company, a specialty chemical company, and Sofion is a software company. They specialize in stage gate software and life cycle assessment software, that sort of thing. And then there's us. And so we do the education and the outreach about iSustain, including training. We held our first training last week on iSustain at the Green Chemistry and Engineering Conference, and we're holding our second one. And this is in collaboration with the Green Chemistry Institute as well. We are holding the next one at the Boston American Chemical Society meeting in August. But it's there is a free version for anyone who comes across it. You can sign in right here, and then, or you can register, and you get a free version to get to try it out and test it and see how it works. And for educators, this was another piece that was sort of key in developing this. For educators, there is a free version that is actually the same level as if you were a paid user. So students and academics actually get a nice free version where they're able to save their work and really start comparing some processes. So it's a great resource, great tool. We're hoping it'll be a great educational tool as it's used more and more. So it's based around what we call scenarios. So how it works is you basically generate a scenario, which means you input all your information about your process. And you're inputting your bill of materials in, so what goes into your process, what comes out, and then the process steps. And then there's a couple other endpoints that you're asked to put in there, and basically it generates a sustainability score, or 12 sustainability scores, one for each of the 12 principles. And you can get a quick really endpoint and a quick reference for how your process is doing. You can make a copy of that process and see, and then improve upon it and see how you're improving and track it as you go as well. Here's the kind of thing that you will see here on the left. You'll get 12 different scores, one for each of the 12 principles, along with a spider graph, which I think I've got in my next slide on the bottom, that graphically represents each one of these 12 endpoints. But it is based on these 12 principles. The scores are between 0 and 100. 100 is the best. And the raw materials that are in the database right now, we have over 5,400 raw materials. It's growing all the time. And you can input, you can send us a request, Beyond Benign, to add more raw materials if you come across some things that aren't in there. We can do this. And a lot of the scores and information are based on European risk phrase information. So I won't go into too much detail about all the details of iSustain. If anyone has any questions, feel free to contact me. But this is the, here I'll show you one of my outputs that you can export it into Excel. And this is the sort of thing, that the graphic representation that you would get. This is a chemical versus a fermentation route of lactic acid. And I've got a comparison. The purple one is actually overlaid by the green. And you can see the fermentation route does better in all of the categories except for energy efficiency here. And that really has to do with it's about a 5-day fermentation process that's required for the converting the sugars over. So it's pretty energy intensive because of that process, so that's why that one drops here. So you can get a quick snapshot really of how you're doing in each of these areas, and it's a pretty good tool, research tool, for looking at your process. So I gave you a quick overview of the programs, all the program areas that we're working on, and I didn't mention this art and science because it's brand new, and I don't know why it's so tiny over here, too. I guess maybe it's because I wasn't going to talk about it. Maybe that's why it decided to shrink. But this is a new area for us. We have a resident artist on staff. He works with us part-time, and we have some... Our philosophy around this is public art is a great way to communicate to community, and so we're doing a number of things, a number of community initiatives with this and K-12 initiatives with merging art and science, and we also have a rotating art exhibit here on site, so if you ever come see us, we don't have anything up right now. We've got a new show coming in soon, but all of our shows will specialize in that interface of art and science. So most of our artists have introduced some sort of scientific component to their art. And the other piece is we've got our resident artist is also working on some greener media for making art, which can be, they are big users of chemicals generally. And so looking for some greener tools for that. So that's fourth piece that I'm not really, we don't have a lot going on in this area, but like I said, it's brand new, but it's super exciting, and it'll be super, super cool once that's developed more. And I think I just have my last slide with my contact information. And if there's any questions, thank you so much for being here and listening.
Great. Thanks, Amy. So let's start with questions. Does anyone on the line have anything they want to ask?
Yeah, this is Buzz. I have a couple of questions. First of all, Amy, great presentation, as always. What will you be looking for in terms of leading indicators to tell you that you're going in the right direction in the K-12 training, and when do you expect to see them? That'd be the first question.
Yeah. Well, that is, we get this question a lot. We get, sort of the metrics, how are you measuring? And what we are currently looking at right now is actually partnering with an organization that does educational studies, because we really aren't set up to be able to track. We would love to be able to track some of the students that we've been working with and to gauge if we are indeed say, inspiring new scientists, or if we are making an impact. We have all kinds of ways of tracking before and after, but it's a lot of it's anecdotal. So we're really looking for someone to partner with on that, on a bigger study, really.
Right.
And I think there's a number of other educational folks that can help with this as well, especially at the college level through much of the work that's going on in the Green Chemistry Education Network. So we don't really know. we don't really know when we're going to have that evidence and how much of an impact we're having. It's such a hard thing to gauge.
Right. The second question is, first of all, as you know, I have a tremendous amount of confidence when Warner Babcock Research Institute or Beyond Benign is doing this, but you mentioned because of the potential workload of getting to all of the opportunities that you might start cloning organizations to take over some of the K-12 and workforce training. A worry I have is that when you pick your clones, you not pick clones that have a – that you pick clones – that have a balanced view of green chemistry and engineering, and what I'm worried about is guarding against an anti-industry tone.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. I'm worried about that as well. So it's a quality control issue that definitely needs to be put. We need to have the proper quality control put in place for that. So you're absolutely right, and that's so we have done some train the trainers programs, and there's a number of organizations that are interested in having similar type programs. But you're absolutely right, and we're setting that up right now to figure out how to deal with that quality control and to make sure that we do still maintain that non-bias approach, because we think that's really really important. So.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Buzz.
Amy, this is Eve. I had a question. Can you hear me?
Yes, hello.
Oh, good. Hi. in the workforce development piece, you mentioned different tools and you mentioned educational opportunities and academic environments. Are you going into the workforce at all? Like, are you going into are any companies wanting you to go into educate employees, larger companies, that kind of thing? Is there anything actually going into companies themselves and doing training?
Yeah. And most of that is done, like I said, when we are contacted by a company that's looking for that to educate employees, we generally partner with the Warner Babcock Institute, or we'll hand it over to them. So it depends on who the workforce is that we'd be training. If it's professional chemists, we'll bring in the Warner Babcock scientists for that. Yes. And then if it's a technician level, which we've been working on, we're getting involved in the community college space, which really is a great feed for technician level workers. And we've been working in our region and actually out in California. We're going to be hosting and running a training out at a community college in California in August. And the goal in this is to really bring the green component to many of the wonderful community college programs, which do serve quite a bit of that technician level, and bring that green component to it, and any new skills and development of new skills that they might need to enter into these jobs. So it's still a place that it's still a space that we're trying to really navigate, and we're it's a tricky one, because we want to make sure that we're training people for the right jobs and that there's going to be a job for them once they've come out of these programs as well. So it's a matter of linking up industry with colleges, with the training. So it's a number of sort of balls in that in that piece. So that's the other way that we've worked in that workforce, or that we are planning on working in that workforce space as well.
So if companies approach you, they're usually approaching you about training a specific aspect of it, or specific, technicians or chemists or et cetera, et cetera. They usually have a very specific goal.
Yes, or it might just be coming and training their scientists on site. Yes,
mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks.
Amy, this is Melissa. You had a slide at one point showing all the U.S. states, and there were stars in all the states where there were K-12 programs. Has that happened sort of organically, or is there a systematic way that those programs are being put in place?
Yeah. A lot of those stars and the teachers have been identified by... A lot of times it's by the funder that we've been working with. And actually, thanks to Buzz, while he was at Pfizer, we've had a lot of Pfizer support. And what Pfizer has done is basically said, they've identified teachers from their Pfizer site locations to come and get trained. So many of those stars, they might be actually located near Pfizer sites or some other company sites, because that's what, a lot of times companies do want to give back to their community. They want to, contribute to the professional development of their teachers in their area. It's a great way to connect to their community. So that's how it's been traditionally. This summer we have a training out in Washington State, which that'll be our middle school one, which will be supported by a number of different folks out in that region. And then we have our high school teacher training out here in August, which will, again, be mostly regional support, although we've got some national support for that as well here in Boston. And it's kind of a little bit, based on if we have funders who would like us to, be very particular in which communities we're working, which we can do, and we've been able to do pretty effectively. So.
Any other questions for Amy? All right. Well, I guess if there's nothing else. We can end. Is there any other parting words from you, Amy?
No, just thank you so much for logging in the middle of the day on a Tuesday, on a very nice Tuesday here on the East Coast. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Amy.